Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about episode 3 of Einstein. And in this, I, in general, get an author or a philosopher and strike on a single source and just read it through from cover to cover. And this sort of builds a more concrete, no-gaps analysis of what's going on. And so too is true with Einstein. In this case, I've taken the Wikipedia article, and onto it I've really extended my knowledge of the chap. Now, there's this sort of basic folklore Einstein, the cultural icon. And as an icon, he is part of the language of Einstein. The actual concept of Einstein, the language to describe Einstein, sort of comes sort of like a circle. People coming into the field can often make statements, and you realise that they've just watched a documentary or watched a cartoon or watched something, and they haven't really gone very much deeper into it. Then you pick up sort of life stories, bits and stories, and you have sort of experiences a little bit similar to Einstein. There's the story of how he didn't wear socks, various little things. Not that I'm a sock wearer, but there are certain things where you just work through and you say, well, social conventions, that's okay, but well, I'm going this particular path. And so there's sort of an empathy some of the time. So a lot of people live a very centralized life. They're very conscious of fashion and what people say, and therefore it's no fault of their own. They just find it harder to calculate or observe. They observe things in Einstein. They say, where does that fit in? Whereas if you're on the area of, say, researching or studying, and you, to a certain point, the study gets inside you, and you no longer care so much what society thinks, simply because it just is not the way forward. It's not going to advance you anywhere. Now, there's sort of another aspect of it, and that's studying the maths of that this chap uncovered, and studying the maths of the people he relied on to come across. And so if you study special relativity, it's more expansive than people think. So the special relativity and electromagnetism are very deeply intertwined, and then special relativity, relativistic quantum mechanical equation, the relativistic Schrodinger equation, which is quantum physics, gives you spin up, spin down, and gives you into this dimension of the universe, which is really affects him. And then so there's all these areas of science in which he got so far, but not into the next level, simply because he was looking at other things. You can probably hear all these birds around the place. I'm out here in there, you know, some little bit of bushland out the back of my place. So there's this thing where you study quantum physics and special relativity. You add the two together, you get a spin. Basically, space-time gives you into the Schrodinger wave equation, gives you matter, antimatter, spin up, spin down. They're the four T, X, Y, Z, if you follow it through. So Einstein specifically, I don't think he knew deeply about antimatter or deeply about quantum wave functions or anything like that. And so he was, although he's brilliant, he was sort of not the advanced figure. He's not a simple icon figure. So he's not like, if I could say, it's like a number, or he's not a methodology, but he is a methodology of thinking within education and stuff like that. Then you also get into general relativity, which I've studied, and it's sort of, that's a nice area to look at. And statistical mechanics and laser equations, again, Einstein's got an input into that in sort of being a step along the way for our journey of the understanding of photons. And he worked with Bose for the Bose-Einstein statistics, which is the really heart of solid-state physics and quantum mechanics going forward. The fact that bosons can actually collapse in on top of each other. Fermions have this Pauli exclusion principle. Again, one has to see bosons as symmetric. You get anti-symmetric wave functions, therefore, that you can't actually put the occupancy of a particular energy level is limited. Or the particular number, quantum numbers in fermions are limited. In bosons, they're unlimited. So there's this entire Bose-Einstein condensate when you cool things down, which is a fourth state of matter. People are always going to fifth states of matter and things like that. So you've got all these areas of physics going forward, and if you have a simple frozen view of Einstein, and you don't understand any in between, there's sort of this confusion that there has been a series of scientific advances and understanding since his time, which has built our modern world. So his understanding, leaving us in 55, is not the understanding. It's the basis of an understanding. It's integral, but it is not we've built other things on top of it. And as you study it, you get an experience. And so it actually, this sort of cult of Einstein is sort of, people draw to it, feel very comfortable, sort of like a campfire, but there is this rest of, he's sort of like a fire, a pre-dawn fire, and now we've experiencing the quantum dawn to describe it forward. So there's just so many areas in which we go. And I'm about to start to read his scientific career, and going up we've got a feeling of his professional career and his personal career. His personal career is based in 1879, I think so. If you do the maths, I think that's a rightish kind of time. And there's some very interesting people that he was just in with the right people. Like his PhD supervisor was Lorentz, and he used Lorentz mathematics to unplug special relativity. So he had the genius, but he also had the opportunity and time, and also certain things were pushing him certain ways. The competitive restrictive system of German education with gymnasiums, whatever they are, pushed him away into the creative regime, becoming a patent clerk. A lot of his stuff, I think he was a patent clerk up to 1906. The idea of it's just a combination of beautiful things. People were looking at timing and causality for, obviously, the causality was wanting to prevent an accident. So, especially if you visit, say, old trains, they have clocks and keys that you put in, various things, so the clock can't advance until the key is gone. So it's actually prevents trains coming off. So there's a lot of publications around that time, people trying to work out causality. So you've got all these factors coming together in his understanding. Then there's this mysterious genius, a self-taught advanced mathematics at 12 years old. So that's a pretty large segment of genius, and one would wonder that if computer apps at the moment and school testing would pick him out and early on and hothouse him in such a way that our expertise would actually wipe him out. Just a thought happening there. Then he had that's in his professional career, and a professional career of and Nazism again coming up, and of sort of the antithesis of what was happening. Then you also get a view looking into him about the weird world of America. So America had, before World War II and after World War II, black and white universities. These universities had no black people in, because there was a black university that black people would go to. And of course, black universities didn't produce anything, didn't get any funding. There was also a Jewish quota. There was no Jewish people in US universities because there was a Jewish quota. You don't realize this until you actually read into the depths of what's going on. The love life of Einstein's also very, I suppose, interesting. There's I don't know. There's, I suppose, ideally, I would say three phases, which ideally you want in one woman. You want romantic love, family-building love, and friendship love. That all goes. But Einstein probably didn't have the resources backing, so he had romantic love with a Marie, the sort of the professor's daughter type of thing. Even in the old movies, it's hard to see how that went across. Then you had the Serbian wife, the I can't pronounce another M woman, who she had the three babies, and then there's just the reality of having children. And of course, one of the children is a daughter who was adopted out or died of scarlet fever. We don't know. It's one of these woolly things people don't care to ask. Then the sons, and one son having schizophrenia, which is sort of like a huge. Families can be easy, families can be hard in general. There's aspects of them, if you dig hard enough, there's always some hardness there. And the logic of it would pull, say, if you weren't fated as a world figure, you'd have the time and resources to put into it. But you had these other people courting away, and I could see that his friends wouldn't necessarily be the most family-oriented people. He's sort of the other scientists that he came across. And then finally, he had a double cousin. So his cousin he married was also a first cousin and a second cousin, by male and female things. So this is amazing things. And she stayed with him up to 36. So that's 20 years before he died. So he died 70, so he'd be 50s. And she died. So it's interesting to see how she provided support to him. And so we've got the actual physics. So I'm reading this from sort of two different aspects from your average person. So the average person hasn't studied general relativity, doesn't use the equations, definitely wouldn't use the Einstein. There's laser equations that he uses, and it takes a little while to actually work through what the statistical mechanics. And he wasn't a statistical mechanics thing. There was Bose, who was an Indian mathematician who worked with Einstein on this, and I suppose you would. So that's something definitely. Special relativity is sort of like nothing. General relativity gets me fascinated over and over again. It's the world of tensors and fields. And again, this is one of the things that we live in a Hollywood-dominated space. And so Einstein's a Hollywood figure. It's a bit like Snow White. Yeah, there's sort of a fantasy tale in it, so it makes it rather hard. It's sort of like Mickey Mouse coming in, and Mickey Mouse actually, say, directing you how to fix your car. It doesn't fit together. So there's the legend things makes it hard to communicate your view of Einstein and the maths to other people. So in a certain way, we've done a service making it popular, but then the actual practical, the fact that it's not like. Sort of like the legend of King Arthur, which is okay, and having that legend, the full-on legends, is great because it's out there. It doesn't matter because what King Arthur and Merlin did doesn't really affect how your television works or your biosecurity, or you can't blow people up with an atomic bomb due to Excalibur. But there's the same sort of cultural mechanisms to describe Einstein as King Arthur, except the consequences are very much different. And you've got a body of people who actually say, oh, well, no, this is Merlin's magic. It's actually good. I'm using it in a product to make a livelihood. So let's read up about his scientific career. Throughout his life, Einstein published hundreds of books and articles. He published more than 300 scientific papers, 150 non-scientific ones. On 5th December 2014, University Archives announced the release of Einstein's paper comprising of more than 30,000 unique documents, which is a lot. Einstein's intellectual achievement originally has made the word Einstein synonymous with genius. which is okay, that's great. However, that then means it's hard to actually work. In addition to the works he did himself, he also collaborated with other scientists, including Bose-Einstein statistics, which is the really the basics of solid state and lasers and stuff like that, and the Einstein refrigerator, exactly. I'm just trying to work out what that is. That's new to me. This is part of the things of actually going through this. You pick up certain traits, like you don't realise that certain factors happening at the time shaped the direction he was going in. 1905, the Annus Mirabilis papers. Annus Mirabilis paper are four articles pertaining to the photoelectric effect, which gave rise to quantum theory, Brownian motion, which is your little things bobbing around about. Now, this is really critical. This is the discovery of the atom. The atom, I can't describe it. The people did not take the atom seriously. I'm aware of this. There's certain maths which I know about and do, but it's not favourable maths, and people just don't take it seriously. So back at this time, if you were an atomic physicist and you talked about the atom, you wouldn't be taken seriously. You wouldn't get grants, you'd be laughed at, you wouldn't get teaching positions. It would be really hard. Similar to at the moment, there's certain areas of maths I know about we'll work on. That's not happy. Special theory of relativity and E equals MC squared. I must admit, I didn't know that the fourth one. I thought the fourth one came at a later date. The Einstein published in Annales de Physique Scientifique Journal in 1905. These four works contribute substantially to the foundation of modern physics and gains the views of space, time, and matter. The four papers are... Now, this is interesting. We are talking about modern physics, and we are teaching old physics in our schools. Okay. And here's a beautiful chart. On the heuristic viewpoint concerning the production and transformation of light. So he had no... This is amazing. He said, I'm going to use Kant and philosophy to argue some sense into all these additional papers. He did no original work on it. He just got these other papers and said, well, this is what the argument's done. I've done review articles. So heuristic viewpoint. A heuristic viewpoint. There you go. He's saying, guys, just suspend your scientific... Put it away. And the area of focus is photoelectric effect, received 18th of March, published of 9th of June. Resolved unsolved puzzles by suggesting that energy exchange only in discrete amounts quantum. The idea was pivotal to the early development of quantum theory. So he had E frequency. So he just basically, energy equals Planck's constant times the frequency. It's a bit deeper. Now, the motion of particles suspended in a stationary liquid are as required by molecular kinetic theory of heat. Brownian motion. Now, this is a brilliant thing that people didn't see atoms and didn't believe in atoms because it wasn't seen, because there was these basically workplace bullying happening right across the physics industry. Ernst Mach was a workplace bully. This is really unknown because people at the time have this romantic idea of these Solvay conferences and physicists being very polite. No, they weren't. There was workplace bullying, and it actually led to Ulrich Boltzmann committing suicide. This was just a horrendous time. Brownian motion. Received on May 18th of July, very quickly, explained empirical evidence of atomic theory supporting the application of statistical physics. So this is the very first one. We see a little thing move around. Now, it's really also interesting that school demonstrations of Brownian motion, the entire story of Brown. So Brown came out as a botanist and sailed around Australia, for God's sake, and we have a good third of our species in Australia are named by Brown. Yet, in the textbook, he's just a quiet
country parson who had a, this is true, this is Australia, Brown, a very famous person involved in Australia, but in our books we have nothing of him. It's all gone ahead, and as you try to bring out evidence, you get the same sort of, it's like bringing out atomic theory. On the electrodynamics of moving bodies, which is special relativity. And this is one of the things that you've got to, I find interesting, is that you pick out, he was doing, this is basically saying special relativity is a combination of my supervisor's work and Maxwell's things. 30th June, 26th of September, reconciled Maxwell's equation for electricity mechanism with the laws of mechanics by introducing changes to mechanics resulting in analysis space. Brilliant evidence that the speed of light is independent of motion of the observer. Discredited. The concept of luminous ether. Now, one of the, I suppose, the interesting things here is that people, it's completely botched the way this is taught, but also the political stance of, oh no, we weren't running things by bullying, we weren't a horrible piece of misogynistic people, we were just really right nice people. So part of one of the Price's last icons of this era swap around is the fact that was it Michelson-Morley experiment, which conclusively disproved the ether, right, is just declared a null experiment. It's one of these things, a little, neat little bow which ties the schoolbook history with this this thing here. Now, does the inertia of a body depend upon its energy content? So I like, rather like, this is also a question. So, you know, I pose a question, and therefore I get across. The equivalence of matter and energy equals mc squared, and by implication, the ability of gravity to bend light, the existence of rest energy on the basis of nuclear energy. That's the significance of it. But I don't think that gets there. But I have to look at it across there. So this was a paper which I haven't read before. I might go across. But then again, you've got to understand the sort of Kantian. So you've got sort of three grades of interpreting. You've got the popular science, opening a textbook. I haven't done a science degree, but I'm teaching science, and it doesn't really matter, and I've watched documentary, etc., that type of stuff. View of it. Then you have the slightly more advanced stuff where you've actually derived equals mc squared and looked at the general relativity. You generally get that out of general relativity. I don't know how that comes about. There's a third area is where you read Kant and just understand Einstein as a rationalist, a non-empirical rationalist. Okay, these are subsections. Statistical mechanics, so this is matrices here, now statistical mechanics. Einstein's first paper, submitted in 1900 to Anand, was on the capillary attraction. It was published in 1901 with the title of Conclusions from Capillary Phenomena. Two papers he published in 1901 and 1903, Thermodynamics attempted to interpret atomic phenomena from a statistical point of view. These papers were foundational to the 1905 paper on Brownian motion, which showed the Brownian motion to construed and firm evidence that molecules exist. So we say, look, we gloss over a period of history that the predominant view that atoms don't exist. You know, just try and understand that. And, you know, look, I would go so far as to say that a young teacher or person who just teaches the history of atomic physics from a textbook and wantonly will not engage or discuss with you is equivalent to someone who says, look, I'm going to take a learner's driver's license, I'm paid for it. I'm in the car, and they just drive around, causing havoc and chaos on the roads. And then when you say, look, all the accidents you've caused, all the destruction you've caused, they just say, I don't understand. And it's sort of, we really have to get past this. Okay, his concerned with the finite atomic size, and his research papers on 1903-1904 was a finite atomic size and diffusion. This is, you know, just trying to get into how big an atom, molecule is and how it moves. Now, the theory of, this is the next section, theory of critical opalescence. So this is scattering blue light. So if you want something opalescence, it's something which the scatterer is in that scatters blue light more than anything else. So if you want something opalescence, you get a glass of water and just drop a small thing of milk, and it's just, so it looks clear, but you can look under the light, it scatters blue light.
Napalm. Einstein returned to the problem of thermodynamic fluctuations, giving a treatment of density variations in fluid at its critical point. Ordinary density fluctuations are controlled by second derivative of the free energy with respect to density. At a critical point, the derivative is zero, leading to large fluctuations. The effect of density fluctuations is that light at all wavelengths is scattered, making the fluid look milky white. So this is a phenomenon which people was big then. You've got to remember that a lot of, if you've got to really start reading around the papers and read the secondary papers that they're reading out. So I don't know what you do, but there's something you do. You put put a fluid under a certain pressure, and it goes milky for a point. Einstein relates this to Rayleigh scattering, which happens when the fluctuations size is much smaller than the wavelength, which explains why the sky is blue. Einstein quantitatively derives critical opalescence from a treatment of the density fluctuations, and demonstrated both the effect and Rayleigh scattering originate from the atomistic construction of matter. Isn't that just, so this is Einstein, why is the sky blue? And the Rayleigh scattering is due to this is the entire thing. It's scatter. You can't have scattering you've got to have a density fluctuation to have scattering. How has it come to be? But you've got to understand that the sheer negativity at the time meant that this turned around to be a great open fertile ground. It's sort of like if you've declared this is barren, nothing, and you can plant a little seed and grow a grass, that is more significant than everyone all growing plots and you grow a little piece of grass. I don't know, I haven't really expressed that properly. Einstein, on the electrodynamics of moving bodies, was received in 1905, published in September the same year. He reconciled conflicts between Maxwell's equations, the law of electromagnetism, and Newton's mechanics by introducing changes in the laws of mechanics. Okay, and this is, it is confusing to read through it now because, I find this is very confusing to read through. I have no problems with Maxwell, and I just find it confusing to put yourself back into the problem, whereas people don't suffer this problem if they don't really understand any of it. I'm not putting myself up, I'm just telling you that if you do Maxwell's equations and you study through and you know the answers, you then interpret it, you derive your interpretation in a slightly different way. Observationally, the effects of these changes are most apparently at high speed, where moving object speeds close to the speed of light. The theory developed in this paper became known as Einstein's special theory of relativity. However, I think what we really miss out for is that we always talk about spaceships. We don't talk about electromagnetism. The paper predicted that when we measure the frame of relativity relatively moving to observe a clock current on a moving body would appear to slow down, and the body itself would contract in the direction of motion. This paper argued that the idea of luminous ether, one of the leading theoretical entities in physics at the time, was superfluous. Okay, so you can understand that people just didn't
people didn't, it's sort of like, oh, it's hard to say. It's like not supporting the Vietnam War in the 1960s Australian Army base. I can't quite describe it, what it's like. His paper, Mass Energy Equivalents, produced E equals MC squared as a consequence of special relativity equations. Einstein's 1905 work on relativity remained controversial for many years, but was accepted by leading physicists, starting with Max Planck. Yeah, do you understand that? I find that just so. And this is the sort of the where the anxiety is to cement the myth, so that you can use the myth to explain your point of view, and so there's sort of an anxiety to cement it, and it sort of becomes a sort of like a disease. Einstein's originally framed special relativity in terms of kinematics and study of moving bodies. In 1908, Hermann Minkowski reinterpreted special relativity in geometric terms in theory of space-time. Einstein adopted Minkowski's formalism in his 1915 paper, Theory of General Relativity. Now, it's both... I find it interesting that both Newton and Einstein and some of the very best physics book does not separate mass and velocity. They talk about momentum. And it's this more fundamental idea which is interesting. It's also interesting in the adoption of the new kilogram, which has come out. Coming on to general relativity, which is interesting. This is the part which I always struggle. I'm a bit dyslexic, and so the contravariance and covariant and contravariant tenses just did my head in. General relativity, the equivalence principle, which is really G equals T. You can't get a smaller equation than that one. It's beautiful. General relativity, GR, is the theory of gravitation that was developed by Einstein between 1917 and 1907 and 1915. According to general relativity, observing gravitational attraction between masses results in warping of space-time by those masses. General relativity has developed into an essential tool in modern astrophysics. I don't know. I wouldn't limit it to that. I suppose it is. The application is that, but if you don't have general relativity, you're just really hard to argue with. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It provides the foundation for current understanding of black holes. Regions of space where gravitational attraction is so strong that not even light can escape. As Einstein later said, the reason for development of general relativity was that the preference of inertial motion with special relativity was unsatisfactory, while a theory which from the outset prefers no state of motion, even accelerated one, should appear more satisfactory. Consequently, in 1907, he published an article on acceleration under special relativity. In the article titled On Relativity Principle and the Conclusions Drawn From, he argued that free fall really is an inertial motion, and that for a free-falling observer, the rules of special relativity must apply. This argument is called the equivalence principle. In the same article, Einstein also predicted the phenomena of gravitational time dilation, gravitational redshift, and deflection of light. Now, what I have to say here is that these people who have not read this paper of freefall do not, therefore, claim that, and I've just covered this in an HSC exam question, is a train moving at constant velocity, constant velocity, an inertial frame? Yes, it's a limited inertial frame. The Z frame is still in freefall. It's either in freefall or in balanced forces. So it's just very, very poorly treated. Gravitational waves. In 1911, Einstein published another article on the influence of gravitational and propagation of light, expanding on the 1907 article, in which he estimated the amount of reflection of light by massive bodies. Thus, theoretical prediction of general relativity could for the first time be tested experimentally. Therefore, you start. Editor? Gravitational waves. In 1916, Einstein predicted gravitational waves, ripples in the curvature of space-time which propagate as waves, travelling outward from the source, transporting energy as gravitational radiation. Now, this is something I think This is at the moment that people are so enamoured with their basics that they have sort of got themselves in. We still haven't got a good general purpose explanation of gravitational waves. It might come here. The existence of gravitational waves is possible under general relativity due to its Lorentz invariance, which brings the concept of finite speed of propagation of physical interactions of gravity with it. By contrast, gravitational waves cannot exist in Newtonian theory of gravitation, which postulates the physical interaction of gravity's traffic at infinite speed, or
the if you really want to go, St. Thomas Aquinas's Middle Ages view of angelic time. Let's just really lampoon it. So that's sort of says you can sort of see that I find it either very easy to understand or complex to understand. The first detection of gravitational waves came in the 1970s through the observation of fairly closely observing neutron stars, PSR B1913+16. The explanation of the delay of the orbital period was that they were emitting gravitational waves. Einstein's prediction was confirmed on the 11th February 2016, when researchers at LIGO published the first observation of gravitational waves. Detected on Earth on the 14th of September 2015, exactly 100 years after the prediction. Isn't that beautiful? Whole argument and on fourth theory. Now, this is new to me. While developing general relativity, Einstein became confused about gauge invariance in the theory. Now, I really wonder what that means. He formulated an argument that led him to conclude that general relativistic field theory is impossible. He gave up looking for a fully generally covariant tensor equation and searched for equations that could be invariant under general linear transformations only. Okay. Well, that explains a few things. So, I don't know. Let's see if I can explain gauge invariance for you. Okay. In June 13, Enwolf draft theory was a result of these investigations. As the name suggests, it's a sketch of a theory, less elegant and more difficult than general relativity, with equations of motion supplemented by additional gauge-fixing conditions. After more than 2 years of intensive work, Einstein realized that the whole argument was mistaken and abandoned the theory in November 2015. So, this is an area I really don't know, but this is a blind area. In 1917, Einstein applied the general theory of relativity to the structure of the universe as a whole. He discovered that the general field equations predicted the universe was dynamic, either contracting or expanding. As observational evidence for the dynamic universe was not known at the time, Einstein introduced a new term called the cosmological constant to field equations in order to allow the theory to predict a static universe. So, that's what he did all the time. He's a Kantian creativity. The modified field equation predicted a static universe of closed curvature in accordance with Einstein's understanding of the Marx's principle in those years. You have to understand, Marx, I just find him a disgusting individual. Marx. Now, I wonder what Marx's principle is. And this model became known as the Einstein world or Einstein static universe. Following the discovery of recession nebula by Edwin Hubble in 1929, Einstein abandoned the static model of the universe and proposed two dynamic models of the cosmos. The Friedmann-Einstein universe in 1931 and the Einstein-De-Sitter universe in 1932. Each of these models, Einstein discarded the cosmological content that it was, in any case, theoretically unsatisfactory. So the Friedmann is the contracting and De-Sitter is the expanding universe. I've got to really go into it. Many advanced, is it Saddle Universe? I've got to really understand it. In many of Einstein's biography, there's a claim that Einstein referred to cosmological contents as his biggest blunder. The astrophysic Mario Livio has recently cast doubt on this claim, suggesting it may be exaggerated. In 2013, a team led by the Irish physicist Cormac O'Rafferty discovered evidence that
Shortly after learning of Hubble's observations of recession of nebulae, Einstein considered a steady-state model of the universe. In hitherto overlooked manuscript apparently written in early 31, Einstein explored a model of the expanding universe in which the density of matter remains constant due to the continuous creation of matter and processes associated with the cosmological cosmos.
This is interesting in so many ways. It goes back 100 years, this continuous creation from Cuvier and Lamarck and all that type of stuff.
He stated in the paper, "In what follows, I would like to draw attention to the solution of equation 1 that can account for Hubble's facts in which the density is constant over time. If one considers physically bound volume, particles of matter will be continually leaving it. For the density to remain constant, the new particles of matter must be continually formed in the volume of space." Thus it appears that Einstein considered a steady-state model of the expanding universe many years before Hoyle, Bondi, and Gold. However, Einstein's steady-state model contains a fundamental flaw, and he quickly abandoned the idea.
Now, the energy momentum pseudo-tensor, and that's an interesting one. I'm out in the Australian bush at the moment. I'm being
eaten alive by flies. These are not flesh-eating flies, thank goodness. These are barbecue flies. This is where you need your typical hat with the cork strings on it. General relativity includes a dynamic space-time, so it's simple to see how to identify conserved energy and momentum. Noether's, and this is a dame, theorem allows these quantities to be determined from the Lagrangian with translational invariance, but general covariance makes translation invariance something of a gauge symmetry, into something of a gauge symmetry. Energy and momentum derived within general relativity by Noether's prescriptions do not make a real tensor for this reason. Okay, well, this is the area that I'm at too. Can I say that after my brain got fried, I'm going to have to really struggle to get back into it. I wonder whether I'll ever get back into this. Einstein argued that this is true for fundamental reasons, because gravitational field could be made to vanish by a choice of coordinates. He maintained that non-variant covariant energy and momentum pseudo-tensor was in fact the best description of the energy and momentum distribution in a gravitational field. This is approach is echoed by Lev Landau and Edgar Lipschitz. Oh yes, and others have come. It's become standard. The use of non-covariant objects like pseudo-tensors was heavily criticized in 1917 by Erwin Schrödinger and others. Okay, so I've really got to, and this is something that I've sort of understood, and it's a bit hairy for me. Wormholes. In 1935, Einstein collaborated with Nathan Rosen to produce a model of the wormhole called the Einstein-Rosen bridges. His motivation was a model of elementary particles charge as a solution to gravitational field equations, in line with the program outlined by Do Gravitational Fields Play an Important Role in the Constitution of Elementary Particles? These shortcuts pasted short-shelled black holes to make a bridge between them, two patches. On one end of the wormhole was a positively charged, on the other would be negatively charged. These properties led Einstein to believe that pairs of particles and antiparticles could be described in this way. Look, that's...
Yeah, it would be really interesting if... Einstein and Feynman were together. My overall view.
Look, I just have to really doubt all of that. Einstein-Cartesian theory. In order to incorporate spinning point particles into general relativity, the affine connection needed to be generalized to include asymmetric part called the torsion. This modification made the Einstein and Cartesian of the 1920s. And of course, quantum physicists don't believe in point particles. Well, I don't. So this is, you know, it's a bit depressing, in fact. There's some points. It's just so hard with this mucked up. The way it's explained, it's still been mucked up. I still think we'll be known in historical time of post-Einstein confusion. But, and it is so interesting to know that these theories are based now. Okay, let's do the final thing between the old quantum theory The theory of general relativity has a fundamental law, the Einstein equations, which describe how space curves. The geodesic equation, which describes how particles move, may be derived from the Einstein equation. Since the equations of general relativity are nonlinear, a bump of energy made out of pure gravitational fields, like a black hole, would move on a trajectory which is determined by the Einstein equations themselves, not by a new law. So Einstein proposed that the path of a singular solution, like a black hole, would be determined by a geodesic from the general relativity itself. This was established by Einstein, Enfield, and Hoffman for point-like objects without angular momentum, and by Rob Kerr for spinning objects. So that's interesting, the spinning drag space-time with it. So I'll try and get into that a bit more at some stage, but one can see this is sort of a template, a real important template to understand where physics has come from. It is the critical narrative, and certain people have taken sort of an episode and constructed sort of like a series, and people have watched episode 13 of Hour 20 and built a prequel based on that, but then it doesn't fit in with the full set. I can't quite describe it. It's sort of like the Star Wars series, and people are building things on it, but the prequels sort of define the Star Wars universe and bring it down. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.